Thanks for choosing the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. In this edition, all things local radio, we'll hear from the Director General and John Myers on the upcoming changes to BBC Local Radio. And we'll hear from a new local radio station preparing to go on the air after just winning a community radio licence for Right at the End of Cornwall.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Yes, this is the Radio Today programme. I'm Stuart Clarkson, in for Trevor Down this week. And we're talking local radio as we get reaction to this month's announcement from the BBC that they're going to stop the cuts, make more local programmes, and in fact invest more in the 39 local radio stations across England. It was a shock for most people working in BBC local radio and the wider industry as well when Tony Hall came out with the news in his speech at the Gillards in Coventry. And the following morning, the DG gave his only interview on the subject, talking live on BBC Radio Leicester to Ben Jackson.
I thought that that change in the budget, those sort of levels of cuts, couldn't sustain. And in fact, insofar as we can find more money in, you know, we're all finding, aren't we? Every sector is finding money difficult. Insofar as we can find more money, I think the investment in local radio is one of the things I do want to prioritise in my time at the BBC. And why? Because I see brilliant work being done. I think the future of local radio is really important in terms of building our communities. And I think in hard times, we need to know and hold to account our decision makers. But I go back, we also need to celebrate. And I see that in what you do. Last time I was here, there was a most wonderful sort of grow your own festival going on in the lobby downstairs. And as I go around the country, I see this in all sorts of ways. And I want to build on the differences. You know, Leicester is not Nottingham, is not Derby. You know, Sheffield is not Leeds. And I want editors in local radio stations to be able to reflect in their own ways the communities they're serving much more strongly.
I mean, it's an interesting point, isn't it? That we're not the same as Nottingham. Nottingham's not the same of Derby. Derby's not the same as Cornwall, is it?
Yeah.
That's the point. And this isn't a blank cheque. You're expecting more from us, more volunteer action, for example, more local, more voices, you know, all that kind of stuff. Not cutting us is not an investment, though, is it? So are you saying that there is more money to come into
yes,
the network?
Yes, I very much hope over the next year, 2 years, that we can, you know, there's no great riches, but actually, insofar as I'm able, I want to back local radio. And again, this is, you know, I've come to this conclusion, you know, because I see England changing. You know, you've got a very clear idea of, you know, nationhood, as it were, in Scotland, in Wales and in Northern Ireland. England's very, very different. The politics of England is very, very different. You know, we're 52 million people, but, you know, it amazes me when you go to Radio Sheffield how, you know, you start saying, have you thought about doing anything with Leeds? Oh, no, thank you very much. And I guess, I don't know, but I guess there's a similar sort of thing in the East Midlands too, you know. But that we are the people and the only people who increasingly, as because of the pressure on local media, we are the people who can express those differences and actually relish those differences. And I think expressing these cultural differences and geographic differences is what I love about local radio.
That's the Director General talking on BBC Radio Leicester. Well, John Myers is with us, long-time commercial radio exec, advisor to both the government and BBC on radio. And he joins us from a far-flung destination this week on the Radio Today programme.
Yes. Greetings, my friend, from the island of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean. And I'm here, not through choice. Well, I am because I was on holiday, but not delayed through choice because I've had a severe ear infection, which means I'm not allowed to fly. And privately, I'm really upset about it because I've got paid gigs back home that I can no longer attend. But outwardly, my wife is jumping for joy at the extension. So it's always nice to make someone happy. But for now, you can call me your Radio Today Mauritius correspondent. And it's not often that you can say that, Stuart.
Worldwide domination is what we're aiming for. So let's start 6 years ago. November 2011, you spent some time in a number of BBC local radio stations as part of one of your Myers reports. And back then, among the things you put in your report, you said that you supported the plan for a networked evening show. You said the number of managing editors should be cut in half. You said they should regionalise station production work. And you also warned that if BBC local radio's audiences fell by much more in terms of share and hours, then they'd likely to have to be a wider debate about its future. So we're here in 2017. Every station Rogers still as a managing editor. They're going to get more autonomy to run their stations. The networked evening show is going next year. Stations are getting their own identities, we're told. Combined audience figures have been dropping, and the latest wave of cuts for local radio is now being binned. And as I say, we're likely to actually see them get more money. Did they listen to anything you said in 2011?
Well, I think what I would say straight away is that what a difference a DG makes who's prepared to invest in local radio, and what a difference 5 years makes. When you go back to when I first did this report, you have to remember it was for a different DG, and that was Mark Thompson. Now, if you recall, Mark had a proposal on his table for £15 million worth of cuts to local radio, and one of the ways that his own executive team were thinking of doing that was by networking the mid-afternoon programme. Now, politicians were up in arms about it. Certainly the listeners didn't like it. And I was asked to go in and have a look at that plan. I did that, and I said it wasn't a plan that I would endorse. I couldn't see how you could make £15 million worth of savings without really affecting what local radio was all about. But if you had to make cuts, and you really had to do it, the only way to do it was to make some internal savings, which went ahead, and also to network the evening show, because I knew a lot of stations would have to come out of it for local sport, etc., and keep daytime on local radio as local as you can. And we achieved other things as well in terms of imaging and things like that. But the big thing that we didn't achieve, and we knew we wouldn't, was asking the managing editors to fall on their sword. It was like asking turkeys to vote for Christmas, wasn't it, really? But I believe it then, and I believe it now. Having an individual managing editor for every single BBC local station is crazy, especially in 2017. There's a smarter way to do it. And of course, now that they've reversed the proposed £10 million of cuts, everyone will think it's Christmas. And believe me, when stations have too much money, things can go awry very quickly indeed.
So let's get a bit more on some of the detail that the DG announced. The evening programme that's shared across the stations in England at the moment is going to be dropped from next summer. Local programmes returning. It'll be up for stations to decide whether they want to hook up with others for regional programmes. Is this a good idea, John?
Well, of course, if you no longer have budgeting restraints, then putting local programmes on a local station is exactly what you should do. I do think they missed a golden opportunity with that evening programme. The creative, I thought, was woeful at times, and it wasn't the best programme for a network. However, they did what they did, and we are where we are. So restoring local programmes is a good idea, but what are they going to replace them with? And if two or three stations want to hook up to do a regional programme, if that offers something of interest to the listeners and it attracts an audience, then yes, why shouldn't they do that? But I would ask them to make sure that the programmes that they put in place are programmes that people want to tune into. You can't just do them because you've got the money to do them.
Now, I know something you focused a lot on in your recent blog on the subject was the DG's announcement that they're going to broaden out their audience. It should be for everyone, said Tony Hall. We're going to be there to serve the Facebook generation every bit as much of the rest of us. From your many years programming radio stations, you and many others in blogs and on Twitter have been saying losing that audience focus is going to be bad news for BBC local radio.
There's no way that you can program a radio station in 2017 for everyone. And I wonder if the words of Tony Hall came out in a slightly different way than he intended it to be. My guess is, if what he's saying is that BBC local radio should be open to anyone to tune into, but you can't program a radio station for everyone and anyone. It's impossible to do. How do you program a station for a 20-year-old and a 55-year-old at the same time? It's about tone, it's about attitude, it's about imaging. How do you write the news? How do you style the news? How do you do the content? What sort of presenters do you hire? There's so many things to consider. So there has to be a demo of sorts, and it will welcome in people all around the shoulders of those demos, I'm sure, and with the specialist programmes. But it's got to have a demo. It can't succeed without it. And anyone who thinks they can program a radio station for everyone in 2017 is more than a little naive.
Well, let's talk about the music. At the moment, I think there's a kind of core playlist that BBC Local Radio taps into, but obviously things aren't heavily formatted as they are in commercial radio. Director General says he's going to bring in some expertise from the music people at Radio 2. That's got to be a good thing, I guess.
Jeff Smith and the team at Radio 2 know what they're doing. Look at the success they've achieved there. And if they can tap into the expertise that they've got there and move it into local radio, then that is great news for everybody. But local radio is not just about music, of course. It is important, but it's not the thing that makes people tune into local radio. It's just a part of the mix. But getting it right when you're playing fewer songs means the songs that you do play are that much more important. So I think bringing in Jeff Smith and expertise, absolutely the right thing to do.
I mean, you look down some of the other bits of the announcement, a fund for celebrating diversity, more partnerships with other local news providers for covering local democracy, bringing back action desks. The cynic might say some of these things are more about ticking boxes and kind of getting the BBC set up for future licence renewal deals with whoever the government is next time it comes round.
I think if you're going to invest in local radio, you've got to invest in journalism, and you've got to invest in information, and you've got to find a way, any way, of connecting with your audience in 2017 and beyond. No one's got the monopoly on being right. No one has the monopoly of saying this is the way that you should run a radio station. But again, so much of this is going to be in the detail. What is it exactly that you're doing, and why are we doing it? The question I always ask in programming is, why? What's the benefit to our listeners? And you've got to be really clear about why you're doing things and the way that you're going to do it for it to be deemed a success. So I think it's good news that there's investment, but we have to be very careful about the way that we're doing it and who we're asking to do it.
I mean, obviously journalism will still play a big part in the output, but is it inevitable, John, now that local radio moves out of the BBC News division and into radio? I mean, Bob Shannon, proven at delivering success at Radio 2, he'd be a good person to oversee this new generation of BBC local radio, wouldn't he?
Well, yes, of course he would be ideal, because he loves radio, he knows what makes it tick, etc. I think it's a shame that people have forgotten about the skill of broadcasting. It's very different than just being on the air and being a presenter. The skill of broadcasting is enormous. It's a great skill. People take years to master it. And you may or may not be a journalist when you're broadcasting. It doesn't really matter. It's about how you connect with your audience. It's about your use of words. It's about the way you take a conversation and the way that you bring listeners into the station. The words can sound very differently coming out of one person's mouth to another. So I do think we need to get back to recognising that broadcasting is a real skill, but journalism is equally a sought-after skill, and we need to make sure we've got both to make local radio really work. People should be on the air because they are the best at what they do, not because they have a degree or who they are.
So what would be your big priorities for the next year or two then, if you were running either the whole of local radio or were in charge of one of these 39 stations in England?
Look, BBC Local Radio has got a get out of jail card here, and it's fantastic news. We've had someone from the very top stand up and tell you how important BBC Local Radio is, and that's good news. They've removed the threat of £10 million of cuts. Nothing can be as positive about BBC Local Radio as we've got today. But if I was running it, the thing I would be looking at and the thing I would be asking and challenging my managers would be, have we got the best people in the best positions across the whole of the network? And if we haven't, we've got to find a way of getting through HR red tape in order to do that. We want the best people in the best positions to give ourselves the best chance of success. And sometimes you've just got to find a way of making that happen. But I'll tell you what I would do, first of all. I'd find three stations out of the network, and I'd use those three to test the new sound of BBC Local Radio. I'd get it right on a small scale. I'd make my mistakes on a small scale. I'd make sure that I fine-tuned everything so that when I come to roll it out across the whole of the network, we're not making expensive mistakes. And I'd love to run one of those stations, although it will never happen, to make sure that local radio has the best chance of success going forward. But what I would say, Stuart, is this. It is impossible going to all the work and doing everything you need to do to make BBC Local Radio fit for the modern world if you then
10 don't have enough money to market it to non-listeners and people who believe local radio sounds like something coming out of an old people's home. That is not what local radio is about. So you have to market the station, and that means market it to a non-BBC platform. And that means spending £250,000 per station at least over 3 years in order to get people to sample the new sound of BBC Local. It would be a crime if you make these changes and then it turns out to be Britain's biggest secret. Marketing is key to the success and the future of BBC Local Radio. So test the product, get it right, and when it's right, shout about it, and shout about it often. And I believe this could be one of the best moments for the future of BBC Local Radio. I hope so, anyway.
I think you're going soft in your old age, John. Thanks for coming on the Radio Today programme, team.
Well, thanks very much indeed, Stuart. If you don't mind, I'm going to go back now to sipping a pina colada as I watch the sun set across the Indian Ocean. I know it's cold where you are, but see right now where I am, life's beautiful. And it should be the same in local radio.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's John Myers. And coming up next, we're heading to Cornwall to talk community radio.
Hey, I'm Josh Collins.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mark Gale.
Hi, I'm Amber Stone.
Hi, I'm Stephen Daly.
I'm Sarah Hughes.
Hi, I'm Matt Shields.
I'm James Martin.
Hello, I'm Graham Torrington, and we're all available for your station today via voicetrackerhub.com.
Need a last-minute show covered? Or have a regular weekend show going?
CHR.
Hot AC.
Gold.
We've got you covered with top-class talent from around the world.
Search according to formats and budget and contact presenters directly.
Find your remote radio talent today.
VoiceTrackerHub.com.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
It is the Radio Today programme, and time to find out about a new local radio station for Newquay that's going to be coming on air in the next couple of years. Freshly awarded a licence by Ofcom, it's Radio Newquay, and we can talk to Matthew Bunt and to Mark Chappell, and they're on the line now. Hi, guys.
Hi there.
Hello.
So, excitement, first of all. It's only a few weeks since you got this licence. What's the feeling like when you get that notification from Ofcom?
Oh, we're absolutely made up, but it was strange how it happened, actually, because I was on the beach in St Ives competition down the road, and I'd heard that stations were being told that day, and we'd spoken on the phone, Matt and I, and we were like, are we going to get it today, are we going to hear, because it's already been about 3 to 4 months, and lo and behold, an email popped into my inbox and I was jumping up and down on a beach.
Yeah, and I remember I was actually at work, and obviously I talked to Mark, and all of a sudden I got a phone call from my wife, Sarah, who's also one of the directors of Radio Newquay, and she was very calm on the phone, just went, right, I've got some good news. I went, right, okay, very understated. I said, okay, just give me a second. I went off into the toilets where I just jumped up and down in joy, and yeah, it's an amazing feeling. I don't really think it's still sunk in yet, has it?
No, I think it will sink in the day we actually go on air, whenever that will be. We've got 2 years to actually launch the radio station, so it's exciting and lots of work lies ahead of us.
And you've both got backgrounds in commercial radio, and you, I know, met when you were working or just about to launch Atlantic about kind of 10, 11 years ago. So what made you want to have a community station in Newquay?
Well, I moved here 2006 to launch Atlantic FM, fell in love with Cornwall. BFPS, I joined BFPS in 2007 and moved back up country, but Matt and Sarah couldn't get rid of me. I was a regular visitor popping down, and back in 2014 I moved permanently back to Cornwall. And I'd always thought this town is crying out for a radio station, and there's a background in radio here as well, which Matt will tell you about in a second. But it's one of those towns that has a great community. It's just obvious that it needs a radio station, particularly when there's other towns around Cornwall that have stations as well.
And the history of radio in Newquay, there used to be a RSL that ran every summer called Malibu Surf FM. And it was run by a guy called Andy Lehman, who went on off the success of Malibu Surf to launch the local newspaper here, the Newquay Voice, which is still going very, very strong today. And it ran from 1999. The first broadcast was during the eclipse. It ran at the same time as the Boardmasters Festival. It was a lot smaller back then. And every summer it became the soundtrack to everyone's summer in Newquay. And even now, even though the last broadcast, which I managed for Andy in 2005, even though that was like 12 years ago, even now, and we found over the last few months as well, when we've been canvassing for support, the number of people who still speak so fondly of Malibu surf is phenomenal. So there was a real hunger for Newquay to have its own radio station again. And a lot of people have so much love and respect for what Malibu did.
One of the things that happened during the campaigning for the licence was I came up with the idea. Well, it'd been in the back of my mind for a while, and I knew that Ofcom were going to look at potentially another round of community radio licensing. So back in November 2016, I started thinking, well, right, it's coming up, we'll have to submit an expression of interest. And I wanted to get, at that stage, I wanted to get Matt involved, but we couldn't, because Matt was at that point working for Pirate FM, which is, of course, the commercial radio station in Cornwall. But Matt's wife, Sarah, I approached her and had a chat with her and said, look, I know we can't involve Matt, but would you like to get involved with this? And as it happens, you left Pirate FM, didn't you, not that long ago, and joined us.
I did, yeah. It was a really, really strange situation being a self-confessed radio aficionado and anorak, a geek, to have Mark come round to my house of an evening, sit downstairs with my wife, talking about lovely radio stuff that I wanted to be involved in. And what I did was I went and sat upstairs in my room watching telly. It was really, really tough. So, but obviously I worked for Pirate at that point and obviously needed to stay professional, and I couldn't be involved for obvious reasons. But I left Pirate earlier on this year, and left it about a month before we submitted the application. And literally as soon as I finished Pirate, I thought, oh, well, nothing's stopping me now. I may as well get involved.
And obviously you both worked at Atlantic, Matt as well, as I say, you worked at Pirate. Two stations that Atlantic was great in terms of serving Cornwall, Pirate still is, and obviously Atlantic's now Heart, but they're very much focused on the whole county, so that's where you're going to set yourself apart, I guess.
Yeah, the overlap with when we were writing the application and coming up with different population figures for the town and the villages around Newquay, we worked out that we overlap Pirates and pretty much Heart as well by about 5.8%. So you know from looking at that they can't give the equivalent coverage about Newquay that we can. So that's why we think as a service it will complement existing local radio stations. And if you look at Heart, it's although the programmes come from Exeter and London, they actually have a dedicated Cornwall Drive programme. The news is very good. Pirates is a great local radio station with a solid news service. It's local all the time. Mm-hmm. And BBC Cornwall, although it's seen a dip in audience, it's still a very, very strong BBC local radio station, one of the strongest on the mainland. And so we think we can complement those services. And bizarrely, here's something interesting. I was the first voice on Atlantic FM, and Matt?
I was the last voice on Atlantic FM.
Wow. Okay, that's good. So you kind of got that covered. reading through your application, there's one word that kind of stands out, and that's the word surf. It's going to be a big part of this new station because it's a big part of town, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, there's two sides to Newquay, and there's a side that people like to think about, which is, you know, the stag and the hen do's. And Newquay did get itself a bit of a reputation in the 90s and into the noughties as well. But it's really turning a corner. So much investment coming into Newquay. And it also means that surfing scene that's always existed is actually getting a bit more prominent. So many people are travelling from London and further afield, all over the world, actually, to come and surf our beaches. It's a huge economy for Cornwall. Many, many tens of millions. Actually, I think it's hundreds of millions of pounds that's injected into Cornwall as a whole through the surfing industry. Unless you've ever been to Newquay, you can't appreciate how ingrained surfing is to the culture of the place and the people. Even if you don't surf, I don't surf, I bodyboard, but still, whenever I go to see friends in Manchester or London or what have you, they can't get over how chilled out and relaxed I am, and they think I'm a surf bum because that's just the way I've been raised. It is so ingrained in pretty much everyone in the town.
It's an interesting one. When you look at the age demographic, it's older than the national average. clearly many of those listeners will be listening to Radio Cornwall as it stands at the moment. But so it's a case of, do we look at them, do we serve them, or do we serve the Peter Pan element of this town? And by that, and it's a comment you hear from lots of business owners, there's this Peter Pan thing where in UK it's not unusual to see a 50-year-old man riding down the street on a skateboard before going home, getting into a wetsuit and then going surfing. Surfing is just, as Matt said, ingrained in the culture here. We've got the Boardmasters Surfer Music Festival, which has grown hugely in recent years. And there's a music scene that fits around surfing. The dress is different, the way people dress here. It's a lot more cash. So consequently, surfing has to be at the heart of what we do alongside all the normal community stuff, because surfing is a community within a community and it touches all aspects of the town. My neighbours who are retired, their son is a former champion surfer. All they talk about is surfing, even though they're in their 70s now.
Is there going to be enough content to do these kind of hourly surf updates?
Oh, God, absolutely. I mean, there's many surfing magazines that are still very, very popular in print. Also, you've got the success stories of websites like Magic Seaweed, who basically talk about surf and nothing else.
Is that a spin-off from the main Magic station?
No, it's not, actually, although that is a good idea.
Magic Christmas, Magic Soul, yeah.
Magic Seaweed.
Yeah. All I've got to say is, if all of a sudden Magic Seaweed pops up on our mucks later on this year, then we're going to be having words with our lawyers, I think. All of these different media outlets are already very, very successful, and they purely focus on the surfing scene. So in order to get the content, yeah, we've got no problem at all.
Our plan is to run... We'll probably call it the 10 Pass Surfcast. You've heard the 10 Pass Forecasts before. We've got the 10 Pass Surfcast. And the idea is that we'll run surf updates, surf forecasts throughout the day. But there'll also be water safety information, news from local competitions, which happen ad hoc depending on the conditions. Plus, of course, you've got the international surfing news as well. Often when you pick up a surf magazine, there's international stories in there. So we'll be covering those because people living in UK are interested as surfers.
And also, let's not forget, in the next Olympics, surfing is also going to be a sport for the first ever time. And all being well, we could be seeing surfers from Newquay competing in the next Olympic Games. So that shows how surfing really is coming of age.
And looking at your application, looks like you're going to be using the technology well, kind of talking about smart voice tracking and really kind of using today's technology to kind of super serve your audience.
Yeah, I mean, it is that embracing technology. It's the only way you can run these small radio stations that are tight for money and often tight for volunteers as well. And talking to people in the community sector, one of the biggest problems is recruiting volunteers. They often start out very well with, you know, 50, 60 people interested, and it gradually dwindles over time. So you can't solely rely on volunteers being available to fill 3-day parts live. And also there's a quality issue there as well. We want the station to be professional but accessible. So we want community voices to feature in everything that we do, and that will be in the many features that we have on the radio station. But we want the station to be listenable. So we'll use technology. So as you say, smart voice tracking. We've not overcommitted either, so we'll be able to voice track remotely if need be. We've got something called the Voice App, which is, other stations have done this under different names. It's essentially an app that people can use on their smartphone or embedded in the website, where listeners can record what's-ons, messages, news about surf contests, and we can then receive that wherever we are into our inbox, edit it, and then use Dropbox and put it on there for play out later and repeat play out across the week.
And how important is the training element of what you're going to do, given your geographic location, you know, being an outpost right at the far end of the country? There aren't many opportunities for people to get involved in radio, I guess, down there.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the, it's a requirement from Ofcom that we actually provide training to people. And we've just, in the campaign process over the last 6 to 8 months, when we were out talking to people, we had a number of people get in touch after we'd presented to them and say, oh, I'd love to get involved and get on the air. So our aim is to launch, get that difficult first few weeks out of the way, and then start to train people. And we'll offer training, and the idea is that, just from that quality control point of view, introduce evening specialist shows as and when people come to us. So Our main aim is to launch with a couple of specialist shows, one being live music, the other being surf, of course. And then gradually, if someone comes to us and we think they've got potential and they pass through our training course, we will then, if they're interested in jazz music, offer them a slot in the evening where they can play their favourite tunes. And for people who aren't interested in jazz, of course, they don't have to listen because it's not on at 10 in the morning. And there's also an issue as well with, I think, with sort of talent in the Southwest generally anyway, isn't there?
Yeah, I know, sort of being on the other side of it, working in commercial radio and actually being in positions where I've had to source talent. And unfortunately, down here in Cornwall, there's not all that much radio talent going on to a quality where you can actually just slot them straight into a show. So what we want to do is we actually want to help the existing broadcasters down here. So Heart, Pirate and BBC Radio Cornwall and further afield by training up their next generation of broadcasters. And the way I see it is, you know, Mark and I have been in radio for a while now, Mark over 20 years. Sorry about that, mate. me for sort of over 15 years. And we're giving people the opportunity to have free training from people who have actually been at the sharp end of local radio, commercial radio. And so we think this is a great opportunity to actually bring up the next generation of broadcasters for our colleagues at the full-time stations.
They can thank us once we find the next Chris Evans.
Have we got a plan for how soon you're going to get this thing on the air?
Well, we've got 2 years to launch it, so we've been having some discussions on that. The difficulty we've got is we've got to launch ideally in the spring, and that's just from a revenue point of view because of tourism. So you want to tap into all those budgets for tourists. And I do think, and we've been inspired and supported a lot by Kerry Jones, who used to run Radio Silly. And of course, that's a big tourist market. And the thing he found was that lots of people listened online and listened to the station when they were on their holidays in the Isles of Scilly. And I think Newquay will definitely be like that. It's one of those towns, if you love it and you come here every summer, you will go home and you will listen to the station online. So the tourism market's really important to us. So I think it's going to be spring. Whether it's next spring or the one after, we don't yet know.
Well, we wish you lots of luck, especially with the Ofcom complaints when you've got Fat Willie's sponsor credits running and people don't like the way they
Yes, thank you, Stuart.
No, all the best, and hope you get a successful launch. We'll follow it with a keen eye.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stuart.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
We're going to travel back in time with David Lloyd's Radio Moments very soon. First, let's get this week's top radio industry stories.
Thank you, Stuart. Talk Radio's Ian Lee is in the jungle. He said in 2005, you'd have to be desperate to be part of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. But as this week admitted, he's only doing it for the cash so the kids can have a nice Christmas. Good on you, Ian. We'll be watching with interest. Global has bought The Bay and Lakeland Radio from CN Group. It gives Global two stations in the Cumbria area for the first time, although they've not said which brand will replace which station. The Bay started life in 1993 as a classic hit station and had a fantastic graveyard shift presenter in the late 1990s, apparently. It's true. A new survey has found that radio is the most valued medium for news. The report says that radio is the most trusted medium, with 77% of listeners saying that they trust radio for national news. The document was launched in Parliament on Tuesday, and you can download the full PDF on our website. Radio 2 has raised over £7.5 million in aid of this year's Children in Need, with a series of live auctions, texting competitions, and fundraising events. And as you've been hearing, there's a new radio station launching in Newquay with a strong emphasis on surfing. Radio Newquay has just over 2 years to launch its new 5-year community radio licence from Ofcom. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
David Lloyd, Radio Moment.
It's 6 years this week since Johnny Vaughan suddenly left the breakfast show on Capital London.
Now, London's biggest breakfast show.
Capital Breakfast.
The Capital Breakfast Show.
Johnny and Lisa.
Good morning, London. Welcome to the Capital Breakfast Show on Friday. I'm Johnny.
I'm Lisa.
And there is no shortage of incident here this morning. I just tossed my probiotic yogurt to Saskia.
And the moral of the story is don't throw yogurts.
But she fumbled it. I didn't know the lid was going to explode, and now we've got a mess here. It looks like one of Lisa's parties.
Johnny Vaughan had his last Capital London Breakfast Show after 7 years this week in 2011. He'd picked up the baton from Tarrant in 2004. When it comes to outside broadcasts, a royal wedding is always great fun. This week in 1947, the nation turned to radio for the marriage of Her Royal Highness Princess Elizabeth to Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten.
And as the wedding march peals out gaily through the abbey, the procession of the bride and bridegrooms moves now down through the 2,000 guests who are standing here, bowing as the procession passes towards the great west door. First, the clergy, the choristers in white surplices, then the canons and the minor
After the
canons.
Climax and excitement, there's that pleasant feeling of relaxing of tension, and people stop and gossip and smile, and there Mr. Attlee and Mr. Bevin are talking to each other, and Mr. and Mrs. Churchill are chatting away, and Mr. Eden is waiting in his place to move, and the clergy have moved away now.
And here is the moment for which we've now been waiting for some time. About one minute ago, the doors opened and out stepped Her Royal Highness the Bride with the Duke of Edinburgh at her side. They stood there alone on the balcony, receiving a tremendous ovation from the crowd. Listen to them now. Listen to the crowd as they cheer.
Just listen to that beautiful commentary. The legendary Frank Gillard, who was to be BBC Local Radio's founding father, he was outside the Abbey. And before Frank, you heard Richard Dimbleby witnessing the processional route. And you also heard Winfred Vaughan Thomas, who in 1937 actually had given the Welsh language commentary on the coronation of King George VI. And he was describing the scene there inside Westminster Abbey for the BBC Home Service. And that lovely 1940 clipped pace of speech. Launch days are often fraught enough without OBs, but that didn't deter BBC Radio Merseyside as it came on air this week in 1967.
My name is Michael Hancock, station manager of Radio Merseyside, and we're broadcasting from the heart of Merseyside, from Commerce House, Liverpool. Out now by radio link to our reporting team, in the air, on the river, and underground. I'm sorry, we can't go to the beacon where Jerry Harrison should be, so on we go now to the second Mersey Tunnel.
Marmion, standing at the excavations for the second Mersey Tunnel in Wallasey. We're about a quarter of a mile inland here from Seacombe Ferry, and it's an absolutely glorious day.
Radio Merseyside, Radio Merseyside, this is your local station, the biggest in the land, and it's Merseyside, Merseyside.
Radio Merseyside will broadcast on VHF at a frequency of 95.85, bringing high-quality radio coverage of every activity that has made Merseyside what it is today. We went along to ask one of the most famous Merseysiders what he thought of the new radio service.
By Jove, just what we wanted. Radio Naughty Ash. It's tatty-falarious. It's full of plumptiousness, and I'm completely discomnocorated.
The early moments of BBC Radio Merseyside this week in 67. It was the third BBC local station after Leicester and Sheffield. Most BBC locals still have their birth names, but many commercial stations have changed more than once. This week, 9 years ago, Power FM on the South Coast changed its colours.
103.2 Power FM. Evolution.
Of a station that loves music.
Let's go.
Ben Glover.
Hello you, we start the weekend early with Alex Party and Pink on Galaxy.
Across the South Coast, love music.
This is Galaxy.
Power FM in Hampshire becoming Galaxy South Coast this week in 2008. It had been Ocean West for a year before it became Power for 20 years. It's now been Capital for 9 years. Are you following that? I think I am. The BBC began serving Scotland in 1923 with a scattering of local services, which then became the BBC Regional Programme, and that became the Home Service and then Radio 4. There were Scottish opt-outs, but it wasn't until this week in 1978 that the country got a station of its own.
Now it's time for Radio Scotland's gala opening night concert from the Kelvin Hall in Glasgow, where we now join my colleague there, Peter Easton.
Thanks very much, Ken. Well, this is a gala night for radio. In fact, a new era of broadcasting in Scotland started today with the birth of Scotland's first national radio station, the new Radio Scotland on 370 metres and VHF. In a moment, we'll be joined by viewers of BBC One because this is a simultaneous broadcast in sound and vision. Some of Scotland's best-known entertainers are contributing their talents to a programme which will reflect the style of music and comedy output from the new Radio Scotland. Andy Cameron and Tom Ferry are both hosting their own shows on the new network, Tom with his mid-morning music show from 11:05 to 12:30 on weekdays, and Andy Cameron will be bringing you his show and his joint on Sundays from 12 until 2.
I do know what it meant, but would Andy's joint pass BBC's compliance now? BBC Radio Scotland launching 39 years ago this week. So with the death of Stuart Henry from Luxembourg and Radio 1 22 years ago.
Stuart Henry in Luxembourg.
BBC Radio Birmingham becoming WM 36 years ago.
And of course it'll be louder and better than ever.
And BBC Radio 1 launching on satellite TV 18 years ago. Those are this week's Radio
Moments. Thank you, David. Thanks too to Matt and Mark this week from Radio Newquay, and to John Myers, our Radio Today Mauritius correspondent, talking about BBC local radio. I'm at Stuart Clarkson on Twitter if you've got any comments about this week's podcast, and I'll be back with another programme next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.